Dave Dravecki, it is such an honor to have you on the NorCal Names podcast, and I was delighted to hear that I was calling you in Turlock. I didn't recognize the area code, and I didn't know whether you were in Pacific time or Mountain time. You're in Turlock time. You're right up the road from us, or down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. We moved out here about 7 years ago. The Giants, you know, they are so good with their alum, and they brought me on as a community ambassador 7 years ago, and so I have been doing that along with a couple of other things that we've been doing, and it's just been wonderful. So I told them, I said, look, if you're going to use me more, I would love to get closer to San Francisco because my kids live there.
That's awesome.
And so Jonathan, my son and daughter-in-law, Joy, they have the grandboys out here in Turlock, and so this was the place to come if we were going to be close to the city and be able to get in with a reasonable commute and do the Giants thing as well as be out here to enjoy our grandkids.
Well, I was going to say the Giants thing is one thing, but driving distance from grandkids, ours is 15 whole minutes away and I can barely stand myself. So that's fantastic. I mean, the same city, there's the reason right there for anything. I mean, I get the Giants part, but being that close to the grandkids, a pretty magical part of life, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, Kat, the grandkids have just moved down to Costa Mesa.
No.
So actually, we're in the process of getting our house in order here so that we can sell, and we want to move into the city and be within walking distance of what I'm doing with the Giants, and then close enough to the airport where I can still get out and do my traveling and speaking. And our nonprofit, Endurance, we can basically operate from anywhere as a virtual office because our assistant runs it out of Colorado Springs. So anyway, all that to say is that since they're down in Costa Mesa, we're moving into San Francisco for an adventure.
There you go. And the Giants could not have picked a better alumni as an ambassador. The story that you have, the passion that you have. I have the honor of hearing you speak at Bayside Church up in Roseville. Gosh, it's been already 6 or 7 years, but you packed the place.
Yeah.
And I still remember it. It was just such an inspirational hour or so. I know everybody asks this, but if you can set the table and maybe talk a little bit about the worst time of your life that led you to some of the best times of your life for the one person out there who might not have heard the story, but to hear it from Dave Dravecki, I think is very powerful.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you asking too. You know, obviously, the worst time came when I heard that I had cancer, and it literally threw us for a loop because we weren't anticipating hearing those words at all. Quite frankly, when the small mass on my left arm had developed, we thought we were dealing with scar tissue that had calcified, and you know that's to be expected sometimes when you're throwing a baseball as much as I did. And so as a result of that, when we were sitting in the examining room and we heard the word cancer, needless to say, we were just totally caught off guard and shocked by that news. And so it took us to a very different place, wondering what the future looked like. And the doctors then saying, outside of a miracle, you'll never pitch again. And so for that moment, needless to say, our world was turned upside down and inside out. But over the next 10 months, I decided that I was going to do everything I could to get healthy first. And then if things were progressing well enough to try and make a comeback, because I love the game so much and it has given so much to me and my family, I didn't just want to walk away and wonder for the rest of my life if I could have made the comeback. And fortunately, by God's grace, we were standing on the mound again on August 10th, 1989, and that was an amazing moment because I kept hearing in my mind, standing on the mound, outside of a miracle, Dave, you'll never pitch again, and I was standing there getting ready to pitch, and that game was magical. I couldn't believe that, in this day and age, I'd have never been able to go 93 pitches in 12-8 innings. So it was amazing that I had the opportunity to do that. We won the ball game. But I think the most significant moment, Kat, was 5 days later when in the sixth inning I threw the pitch where my arm broke, and I was laying on the ground, and I heard words that Bob Knepper, a teammate of mine, had shared with me just 5 hours earlier that revolved around what would become what was next for Dave Grubecki. And those words were basically, Dave, this isn't about the miracle of the comeback as much as it is the miracle of salvation that occurred in your life when you met Jesus back in 1981 and followed him. And he said, what God's doing is, through baseball, providing a platform for you to share his love with those who hurt. And at the moment, I thought that was fine, but I was playing baseball. And some 5 hours later, laying on the ground, those are the only words I could hear, Pat.
Wow.
The words that Bob had shared with me. So, unfortunately, we had to go through some pretty tough stuff, clinical depression, in counseling for 30 months, dealing with anger issues, let alone the cancer reoccurring, more surgeries, radiation therapy. And then finally, in 1993, getting on the other side of that and all of a sudden beginning to understand the words that Bob Knepper had shared with me and what that would mean moving forward was absolutely amazing, because from my perspective, and we've heard this often, you know, God took lemons and turned them into lemonade. And so my story, the worst of it was having to deal with the cancer, having to battle clinical depression, having to deal with anger issues, an amputation where I literally lost my left arm and shoulder, and the reality of throwing a baseball with my left hand being gone, to understanding that there really was something bigger going on in my life. And that was the opportunity now to give back that which was given to me during the most difficult time in my life, and that was the way in which God used people to pour his grace all over us through that period of time, because it wasn't pretty, and it was very difficult. And so now to be able to come alongside others and encourage them in the midst of their tough places as they battle with their afflictions, whatever they may be,
so
we get the unique privilege of sharing our story and encouraging them.
Well, so you have to have had a time during all of this, the cancer, the amputation, the depression, where did you, where your faith was shaken, where I've been, where I've thought, you know what kind of God would do this? There's a greater good, but right now I don't see it. I don't feel it. I don't understand it. And I'm sure you have spoken to many, many people since you've become an inspirational speaker who have come to you and said, what kind of a God would do this, you know, to a child, to a family, to a community? And what was your experience with those feelings, if at all, during your toughest times?
Yeah, you know, while I found myself in the midst of that, it's really interesting. I am, you know, those are the kind of the questions that Jan would ask. We've learned that that as we've looked at each other and our personalities, I am so much about just, okay, I'm to trust God, and even though I don't know how to do that, I'm going to trust him. And there was very little questioning along the way. For me, it was the frustration that I had that stemmed from not being able to do things physically that I was once capable of doing. You see, growing up as a kid, I was always told I wasn't smart enough, or, you know, that I couldn't really succeed in the classroom the way that others were succeeding and doing well in the classroom, and that bothered me so much. I didn't like thinking I was stupid, so I created this environment where I learned to use big words so I could sound smart. And the one thing that I knew I could do was athletics, and so I poured myself into the athletics. And so when it came to dealing with God in the midst of the struggles, it wasn't the struggle. I did struggle emotionally, and I did struggle spiritually. It's not to say that I didn't, but I didn't question him in the process. What I struggled with was, man, from a physical standpoint, this has just rocked my world.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to be able to do? And so my frustration over not being able to do things turned into struggling to manage myself emotionally, which consequently affected me spiritually. And so, you know, I just became a mess. And as a result of becoming a mess and not knowing how to handle any of that stuff, I became very angry. And so, you know, it got to the point, as you may have heard when I shared my story, that I became verbally abusive to my family, to Jan. And that was just a very ugly time in my life. And it was really hard to deal with that stuff. I think most of us that find ourselves in the midst of pain and suffering go through those struggles. Some manage it better than others. But in the end, I think the most important thing is, you know, whether I know the outcome or not, it's not necessarily about finding out what the outcome is. It's about what I can see in the middle of it that can give me strength, that can give me peace, that can give me hope. And even in the midst of the most chaotic times for me, God still provided the strength. He still provided the hope. And from time to time, I'm not going to say it was there all the time, but from time to time, there was peace. And I think a big part of understanding how that all works is by simply looking at the people that he brought into my life that brought the strength and the comfort and the peace and the hope through their words, through their presence, through their touch, through their prayers, through their tears and their laughter. I mean, they were very human. They were very real. And they loved us in a way that revealed just how much God loves us and cares for us. And I've got to tell you, that was what sustained Jan and I in getting through that process.
You wrote in
that
one
was
of
just a powerful time for us.
Well, and you wrote in one of your books, "Little did I know that the loss of my childhood dream would become a platform to share hope with the suffering around the world." And you also talked about how, and you mentioned it, Dave, since we started speaking, but that to lose your arm, it was what you loved and lived for and did. And you likened it to a concert pianist losing his fingers or a marathon runner losing his feet and, you know, sort of a now what. But then how you turned it around to share hope with the suffering around the world. You've got best-selling books. You've got this great endurance website, and I love the definition of endurance, the ability to bear pain or hardship, the strength to continue despite fatigue, stress, or other adverse conditions. And I love that there's a button on your website where it says, "I am in pain," or "I know someone in pain." So talk about that, where you offer people help, whether it's them or whether there's someone in their life that needs help and they want to help.
Yeah, I think it's so important to, first of all, because it was shown to us to have our pain recognized and to acknowledge that pain and not to run from that pain, to stare it straight in the face and realize that it's real, and for people not to come in your world and try and remove that pain from you, but simply to acknowledge that it's there, but you're going to be with me through that pain. And I think one of the most important things that Jan and I both learned in the process was this is not about trying to fix someone's story that's broken. It's about entering into that story with them and helping them to know and understand that they're not alone. I think that's one of the most important things when any of us go through pain and suffering is to know that we're not alone. Because here's the thing, Kat, one of the things that we, by nature, I think, have a tendency to do when pain and suffering hits is to withdraw.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And in the withdrawing, we become self-absorbed and we begin to create all these stories that aren't true about what might happen because we don't know what's going to happen. And so the bottom line is that as we recognize and acknowledge that and enter into it and are able to share it with someone, it doesn't become so powerful in relationship to robbing us of still living. And I know that firsthand because pain can literally, the pain and the question or doubts of what's ahead can grip me with fear and wondering what's going to happen. And I can be isolated, and in the isolation, I can then begin to start drumming up all these scenarios about what's going to take place with the days and the weeks and the mm-hmm. months ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody enters into that pain cat, and they're there to be almost like a soothing balm on that wound of pain, it helps to cope with that pain a little bit better. And as you move through it and someone displays that love, when you get to the other side, that's all we were consumed with, was being able to take that love that we received through the pain and the suffering and to be able to enter in, when given permission, enter into somebody else's pain and help by being that soothing balm on their wound.
And I love your saying, it's not what you do, it's who you are, right?
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think that's a big part of what I've learned in this life, is that so much of being an athlete is about what you do. It's all performance-based. And you look at our culture, you look at our society, everything is about being performance-based. And so we begin to identify with our performance. Well, what happens when you aren't performing very well? You know, you can it can be extremely destructive if you don't know how to handle
failure.
Right. And most of life is about learning through failure. It's when you can understand who you are that it gives you the ability to manage the good, the bad, and the ugly, and to manage it in a way that, although sometimes may not look pretty, because we're all human and we're all real and we're going to struggle. This whole identity thing is what gives you the grace to keep moving forward. Because if I know that on my worst day, Kat, I'm loved more than I can comprehend by the God who created me, then when I find myself in the most difficult of times and I remember that I am still loved, even when I'm ugly, it softens the blow of the pain that I experience or the pain that I give out.
That's amazing.
And it's understanding the power of grace. Grace is not cheap. It came at a huge price. And so for me to experience that kind of grace from the God of the universe that loves me so much is the same kind of grace that I want to display to others and letting them see how much God loves them, regardless of whether or not they're connected with God.
You wrote a great book called Called Up, Stories of Life and Faith from the Great Game of Baseball. And it says here, Dave leads us through 9 innings of stories from the ballpark, expanding on each as an analogy for the Christian walk. So baseball was part of your life for a reason. Some of the little things I highlighted. In life, unlike baseball, no one pitches a no-hitter. And thanks to God's grace, you don't have to. You talk about how Jackie Robinson's faith sustained him the year he broke the color barrier. The wit and the wisdom of Yogi Berra. And this one, the challenges you faced living out your Christian faith with your teammates. That was a tough one?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it was. Because, you know, I think looking back during that time, there's a few things that I would have done differently, Kat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't that we were isolated. You know, guys like Atlee Hammaker and myself and Brett Butler and Scotty Gereltz and Greg Linton, and there were several guys on the team that were actively involved in chapel, and we all kind of hung together. You know, I think if I would have had a chance to go back and do it all over again, I would have still hung with those guys, but I would have made an attempt to spend more time with my other teammates.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I intentionally isolated myself from them, because I love them. It wasn't that at all. It was just being more intentional and engaging with them. And so, You know, I think the challenges came sometimes when guys would tease you. But you know what? That was okay. For the most part, the players that I had the unique privilege of playing baseball with had a genuine respect for the guys that were in chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we respected where those guys were at, everything was okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, contrary to what a lot of people may have thought during the God Squad years, you know, those were, you know, for us in the Giants organization, I mean, to this day, I've got great relationships with so many of my teammates.
Who do you hang with these days still, or who are you still in touch with?
Oh, I stay in touch with Will Clark, Jeffrey Leonard, Kevin Mitchell.
Hmm.
Kevin Mitchell calls me on a regular basis to check in to see how I'm doing.
And remind people who Kevin Mitchell is.
Left fielder, he was in the trade
that
I was in to come over to the Giants on the 4th of July, 5th of July, with Craig Lefferts, myself, and Kevin Mitchell when we were traded from the San Diego Padres.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin's a San Diego boy that played left field. He's the guy that I was just at the Hall of Fame. There is film of Kevin making that barehanded catch in left field.
Love it.
You know, against the St. Louis Cardinals. And so just a great baseball player, but a dear friend, loves my family. You know, that's one of the things that's really cool about the 88, 87, 88, 89 Giants teams. Many of us still stay connected. And, you know, the Giants are so good in bringing us back for special celebrations that when they do invite that particular team back, do you know the last time we were together, 19 of the 26 or 27 guys that were in the big leagues during that time of the year, maybe 28 guys, 19 of them and their wives and their kids showed up.
Wow. That's family.
I mean, that's
family.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's family.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, when you talk about the Christian thing and, you know, some of the struggles that may have been there, for me and for Atlee and others in that group that I was close with, for the most part, we had a great relationship with our teammates, and it wasn't an us and them thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important to say because, like I said, the only thing that I wish I would have done more was engage with guys that weren't in chapel, you know, spend more time with them and enjoy my time with them. Because I think that's really important.
I want to close this with this. You also wrote a book, When You Can't Come Back, and this was on an Amazon review, and I just love this. This is in closing. Someone writes, "This is a terrific book written with honesty and courage and filled with wisdom and encouragement. However, the title is a bit misleading because Dave and Jan do come back better and stronger than ever." So I thought that was pretty cool.
thank you. Yeah, you know, I oftentimes will look at the cover and cringe, to be honest with you. Because it, in many respects, is just an extension of the comeback. It really is. And I want to share one thing with you before we close. I was reading this morning in Genesis, and it was notes from Eugene Peterson following the scripture that I was reading. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was it says, simple as it is, the birth story of Isaac with Abraham and Sarah, who were in their old age and all of a sudden had Isaac as a baby, it sends an important message for people of faith, one that needs repeating over and over again. The message is that God invades us with new life, and that life changes who we are. God isn't a means by which we solve problems. And he isn't a means to avoid problems. God creates new life. He's the creator of persons, not a solver of problems. And,
wow.
You know, I think about that phrase, and I think about my life, and the real focus was on the who in that statement. It's not what we do that matters most. It's who we are, because he's in the business of creating who we are. Because of his great love for us through his son, Jesus. And it really helps to understand, you know, that life, it's going to rain on the good, and it's going to rain on the evil. The sun's going to shine on the good, and it's going to shine on the evil. Mm. And in the end, things will happen. But it's more about who we are and how we go about living our lives as we come in contact with others and display the amazing love that was first given to us.
Dave Dravecki, this is the best part of my day. I would say week. This was pretty awesome. I cannot thank you enough for your inspiration, for your time. And I'm welcome back to Northern California. I thought you were in Colorado, although you're heading out into the San Francisco area. So you're still going to be good and local. And again, yes. Thank you so much for your time. I so appreciate it.
Kat, it was my pleasure. Thank you.